Welcome back, everybody, into Bills Chat. I am Josh McCarty. With me tonight, as always, is Luca. And Luca, don't look now, but the Bills improved to 7-2 and are on a little bit of a winning streak.
Ah, it's beautiful. Four-game winning streak with a three-game winning streak to start the season, sandwiching a two-game losing streak that we don't have to talk about. But it's fantastic. It's a great feeling. You know, was it a smooth way that we got here? And we'll discuss that to length. No, not exactly. But overall, I do think that whereas may in the moment, it might've not felt smooth. I think you made a great point to us off air before we started recording, where it might've been a little bit more smooth once you dive into it a little bit more than it perceived to be. Beating the Dolphins, kind of putting the AFC East all but clinched at this moment in time. It's a pretty crazy thing to think about, since it's only November 3rd as we record this, November 4th or later that you're listening to this, but early November, regardless, that you can already say that your eyes may have shifted away from the division, since it would take a pretty cataclysmic fall from grace to lose this division at this point in time. So, vibes are high right now, Josh. Vibes are very, very high when it comes to Bills football.
Vibes are very, very high. I agree. I'm going to break one of my own rules, Luca. Normally at this point, I ask you, what was your thought when the game ended? I'm going to back up four plays. Tyler Bass is walking onto the field for a 61-yard field goal with 10 seconds left. And the Bills are either going to take the lead or Tyler Bass is going to miss a very long field goal. And the Dolphins, with two timeouts left, are going to have a shot to get into field goal range on their own, albeit there was 5 seconds left after the ball hit the ground, and it would have taken, you know, a pretty miraculous collapse on the Bills' part to get the Dolphins into field goal range. But we've seen them give up Hail Marys before. But anyway, Tyler Bass is walking onto the field with 10 seconds left. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking, how badly is this going to go? And hopefully we can just get this thing to overtime and see what happens. Because faith is low in Bass going into that. And he missed an extra point already on the day. And I genuinely believe anyone out there that would have said that they had trust and belief in Bass to hit a 61-yard game win field goal, or basically walk off field goal, would be lying. And on top of it all, going into that field goal, the vibes were very low. It's not to bring vibes back into this, but the vibes were very low. I said to a friend in my living room, I was like, couldn't be a worse situation for him to be coming in to hit this game winner. If there was ever a time for Bass to maybe dig deep, find something in himself mentally to break through whatever the heck's been going on for what feels like over a year now, calendar year, this feels like that moment. But going into it, yeah. I mean, if I had to put a percent chance that Tyler Bass was going to hit that field goal, I'd say my confidence was at 25%, and that would probably be generous. I know Bass has hit bombs before. I know he has a strong leg, but in no world do I think a guy who came into this week, I want to say he was like 12 of 16 on field goals so far this year. Like, why in any world would I believe that guy then, in a high pressure moment with everything that had just transpired in the few plays before it, is going to step up and hit a 61 yarder for this team and win this game, especially when he can't hit what we are going to call, air quotes, conventional extra point even previously in that game, that it had to have stayed in his head up until the moment that he saw that ball go through the uprights. That had to be still on his mind. So not very confident at all when that was happening before the kick of the ball had occurred.
You mentioned the vibes were down. I think the vibes were even down for me because of how ineffective the Bills' drive was there.
Yes.
When the Bills get the ball back, so Miami ties it up with a Tua touchdown pass to Jaylen Waddle, Sanders 60 extra point. There's a minute 38 left, and the Bills take over the ball at their own 30-yard line after the touchback. A minute 38 for a Bills team that on their last several drives have gone touchdown, touchdown, and then field goal, and then the only reason it was a field goal is because of Keon Coleman dropping a ball that goes into Jalen Ramsey's lap. So No, I'm sorry. The only reason it was a field goal is because Josh Allen runs to the end zone and gets a phantom holding call on Osiris Torrance. So the Bills had done everything they needed to on offense to go through the Dolphins defense. I am super confident when the Bills take the field with a minute 38 left that they're going to get into field goal range. I guess they did, but the turning point of that drive to me, third and nine, the Bills are at their own 31. There's only 54 seconds left. Josh Allen drops back, throws up kind of a prayer to Keon Coleman, gets his hands on it, doesn't come down with it, but then Jordan Poyer flies in with a very blatant, unnecessary roughness helmet-to-helmet hit that extends the drive, and it sets up Buffalo first and 10 on their own 46. At that point, everybody in the world is thinking, well, here we go. The Bills are going to be just fine. But it's Josh Allen short pass to Mac Hollins for 7 yards. Josh Allen short pass to Mac Hollins for 4 yards. We're not going anywhere. Spiking the ball, incomplete to Samuel, incomplete to Kincaid. And now they're trotting out the field goal unit. And it's and the field goal is at the Miami 43-yard line. And for one, kudos to Tyler Bass. What an amazing story for him. We all know the story dating back to last year's playoff game where he misses the game winner or the game tire against the Chiefs. Already had a down year that year. And then this year, there's been some ups, mainly some downs. Some downs today with the missed extra point, the other one that doinks in off the upright. It's been a rough stretch for Tyler Bass. So good for him. Good for the Bills winning this game. Luca, I'm a little bit jealous of Dolphins content creators today because much like I said last week with Seattle, I feel like the more interesting point of view to take this game from is the Miami point of view. If you're old enough to remember what the Bills playoff drought was like and what the Patriots owning the Bills was like, that is the existence that Dolphins fans are living right now with our Buffalo Bills, particularly Josh Allen. Every single game, it feels like they are destined to lose. If you go back far enough to these Patriot games, it wasn't always the Patriots blowing the doors off of the Bills. There were a lot of heartbreakers mixed in there. Whether it was the 2006 opener, Dick Duron's first game as head coach, J.P. Lossman drops back, keeps dropping back until he's in the end zone, and Vince Wilfork tackles him for a safety, and the Bills lose by, I think, a point. There's the Leotis McKelvin fumble game, Trent Edwards, T.O.'s first game as a Bill, Sunday night or Monday night football. Leotis McKelvin fumbles a kickoff when the Bills had complete control of that game. E.J. Manuel's first start in Buffalo, the Bills lose on a walk-off field goal. There was the Ryan Fitzpatrick interception in the end zone where he's going for T.J. Graham, and everybody's like, why are you not throwing to Stevie Johnson? There were heartbreakers mixed in there, but the long part of this is even on days where the Patriots didn't have their fastball and it felt like the Bills gave it everything they had, the better team still found a way to win. And as Bills fans, it would make you sick to your stomach because you're like, why do you need this? You've done nothing but win. Can we just have one day? This would mean so much for us one day. And that day that Ryan Fitzpatrick finally beat the Patriots in Buffalo, they came this close to tearing the goalpost down. It was a celebration. It was a party. And that's exactly what you saw in Miami 3 years ago when they beat the Bills in the Sun game. It was McDaniel's first game against the Bills. He beats the Bills. He's come in and slayed the dragon. They're tearing the house down. They're celebrating in the locker room. He's gone on to lose six straight to the Bills. And it just feels like we are now seeing it from the other side where the Bills come into this game. They're down their best cornerback. They're down their best receiver. And they start off slow. The defense can't get any stops. They're missing extra points. The referees are making calls against them bad enough that if I mention it, because I'm not a blame the refs guy, that it's frustrating. They're dropping touchdown passes that bounce up in the air and go for interceptions. And with all of that, they still find a way with a kicker who was this close to being cut by the team, hits a 61-yard walk-off field goal. Or not walk off, but end of game field goal to beat you. If you're a Dolphins fan, Luca, you're thinking we're never going to beat these guys.
It's plain and simple. That's exactly what it is. I mean, even to back up everything you're saying, the Dolphins had a game today where they essentially had 400 yards of total offense. The total finished at 373, but don't mind you, there's 26 yards that came off of that due to that final play of the game. they essentially were at 400 yards of total offense. And they absolutely outgained the Bills and had a great game plan. I will say this, if I'm also a Dolphins content creator, I'm frustrated with the fact that Raheem Mostert was a very efficient runner on the day, but for whatever reason got a little bit of a doghouse benching due to Taron Johnson punching the ball out of his hands. I made the comment during the game in my living room how prehistoric of a thought process that is, especially if you don't take into consideration just how maybe a fumble has happened. And it's one thing to just be very loose with the ball, but to just have it forcefully punched out of your arm should not put you in the doghouse all of a sudden, especially if you've been an efficient player and a great player for that offense, because all you're doing is hurting the rest of your team by making that decision. And all of a sudden you put in a rookie Jalen Wright in there who can barely run the ball at all against this defense. So now you're just down to your singular Achan in the backfield to do anything. And it started, if you notice, it started to kind of dwindle their offensive production at that point in time, but they were still doing everything right. Jalen Waddle had zero targets in the game until deep into the third quarter, I believe. Maybe it was the fourth quarter already at that point. Gets the touchdown for them that ties it up. And it's just one of those things where they're doing everything right. And like you said, the Bills are having things go against them. And yet the better team overall, the better team between the two organizations, still found a way to win. That's what, as you said perfectly, that's what the Patriots teams used to do to a lot of different divisional opponents throughout all those years of dominance. When you are the better team, when you're the better organization, doesn't need your A-plus game to see wins through, because that's how you continue to dominate. And if you are a Dolphins fan, if you are a Dolphins content creator, if you're someone that supports that Dolphins team, unfortunately, you are sitting there wondering how the hell you're going to get over that hill. Because even your A effort, where it didn't feel like McDermott had his best game by far against the Dolphins, defensively, there was a lot to be desired from a Bills fan's perspective. And they were able to kind of get the bounces to go their way. And they were able to do pretty damn well against this Bills team overall, one that they let run all over them earlier this season. They held them to 94 total rushing yards. And yet it still wasn't enough. You still allowed 30 total points. And as you said, a struggling kicker was still able to come up clutch against you. Dolphins fans have to be miserable right now. The season is lost from a divisional aspect. And from there as well, you're now sitting at six losses. And realistically, you can maybe only afford one more loss for the remainder of the season if you still hope to make the playoffs. Because a 9-win team, yes, there's that 7 seed, but overall, a 9-win team is going to need a lot of luck to get into the playoffs, in my eyes. Maybe in the AFC, if you see a lot of those top-heavy teams separate and a lot of the other teams just get lost in the mix, you could maybe see that. But overall, conventional wisdom tells you you need to get to 10 wins. That means you can only afford 7 losses, and you're sitting there at 2-6. No more bye. You just had that. What do you do now? Tua's back. What's your excuse now? Your offense went great. You still lost. What are you going to do now? If you're a Dolphins fan, you have no idea what that answer is. As a Bills fan, feels fantastic to sit there and look at it from afar and not worry about it and sit there watching other NFL teams and other NFL games and go, is this what it's like to not have a Josh Allen? Is this what it's like not to have anything else? Because boy, in that 4 o'clock window, I will also say, Josh, watching some of the quarterback play that was happening, like a Geno Smith throwing some wild interceptions or anything like that, it's like, I am very thankful that Josh Allen is a Buffalo Bill. And I am very thankful that even if we're, let's say, having a B- of a game overall, or you're just not getting a lucky kind of bounce of the day, you can still pull out that win. You can still come out with a victory and sit there top of the division, all but clinched, 7 wins in the bag already. And realistically, you're just on to the next week and hopefully are playing a Colts team that, you know, you don't overlook. But you get through that game as you have another massive game after that that will have implications bigger than just division at that moment in time.
And just so everybody knows, we are recording this while the Colts are in process of playing the Vikings. They're down 14-10 at the beginning of the fourth quarter. So we don't know what the Colts record is as they face the Bills. I'm assuming by the time we're done recording, we'll know that so we can mention that. Yeah. You know, Luka, I think about this game. I think about it. You know, it's going to be remembered as the Tyler Bass game, I think, for sure. You know, maybe there's a Jordan Poyer aspect of it, too. But did we learn anything about the Bills? One thing that I find interesting, that when the Bills traded for Amari Cooper, it felt like, okay, now the offense is whole again. Because we saw some warts in the offense that really showed up against the Texans and the Ravens. And what we saw today was a Bills team that had 7 points taken off the scoreboard because Keon Coleman couldn't catch a ball right in his hands where he walks into the end zone. We saw 7 points taken off the scoreboard because the referee saw a holding call that every replay that we saw not only didn't identify Osiris Torrance, whose number was called, but it wasn't even a situation where it was like, oh, the ref got his number wrong. It was nobody held. This is bad call. You had Mitchell Schwartz, former offensive lineman, being like, what's the call here? I don't understand this. Yeah. So 7 points taken off there, it ends up being a field goal. You have an extra point missed by the Bills. No Amari Cooper, and they still score 30. Mm-hmm. I think that tells us something. It could tell us something about the Dolphins defense that was playing without Phillips and playing without Holland for sure, or Kohu if you want to bring him in there, although he's having a down year. But what else do we learn about this team, Luca? I got Ray Davis in my mind a little bit. I have some negative things in my mind, particularly on the defensive side. Is there anything about this team that you're on a different spot right now than you were before the game started?
Yeah, there is one thing. I will say this. Josh Allen struggled to kind of hit conventional outs, we're going to call it, and I'm just going to put it this way. Feels like those yips still exist in Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. They time and time again, and it wasn't just, you know, quick outs or anything, which there were a lot of those dirted, but there was even a couple other ones. I vividly remember a friend in my living room just, Josh, you got to have it. And mm-hmm. when you watch the replay, he's just not planting and throwing it. I think don't remember what it was, but there was no even pass rush, and Deion Dawkins off the snap was just standing upright. It was a really awkward looking play from the snap. So I know it was an obvious passing situation where the Dolphins were kind of conceding and not even rushing the passer. And from there, it's like Josh Allen still flat footed through the ball and dirted it to his intended receiver in that moment in time. And you're just like, hey, that's a time to be composed and just drive off your back foot and hit whatever throw you're trying to throw. Like, you don't have to rush it. You don't have to have the yips, whatever the situation might be. I know that was at the tail end of the game, so maybe he was just overly concerned about the clock and not even thinking about the fact that no one's in his face and no one's even coming close. But I am a little bit where it's like, if Josh Allen's not super comfortable, those yips are very much there. And then the other thing that's a little bit of a concern is, I mean, I said it in my other point about the Dolphins, like, the stats lie a little bit because they were pretty much at 400 yards total. They were the edge contain or lack thereof in the run game. Holy shit. Like, mm-hmm. that was happening way too much, and way too much considering that's normally a strength of Gregory Rousseau and the other edge players in this defense. Like, it just wasn't there. And then the interior defensive line wasn't helping as well, but that's where I kind of go with Mostert and Achane. Like, they were having a field day on the edge in the run game. Like, it was there. At any point they wanted to either bounce it out or it was designed to go outside, they were going to pick up 5+ yards. It was always apparent. The run fits were very sloppy and not there. But still, to battle through all of that, again, to have kind of like a B-, maybe even approaching C+ game and still come out with the win, it's one of those ones where this might be one of the, if I were Sean McDermott, this is probably your favorite win. Where mm-hmm. you win, but there's going to be a lot of tape to watch Monday. I don't know if he actually said they got Monday off or not. I don't know if that happened.
He did.
Okay.
He said it with his armor on Tyler Bass. He's like, you want victory Monday?
No, this would have been one where it's like, we're coming in Monday because there's too much damn tape that we need to watch. Because I do think there's a lot that needs to be kind of looked at on this one and be like, this needs to be fixed. This needs to be fixed. Because you have a Colts team that, at this moment in time, they're struggling a little bit offensively, but Jonathan Taylor's coming, you know, or you're going to Jonathan Taylor's house, and that's going to be a problem. And there's just things right now that it's like, there's a lot to be desired from different facets of the game overall, but when you can still not have that workout and win, that kind of mends it all, and you're not too overly upset over it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I agree with you what you said about the defensive line. It's funny, McDermott in his post game locker room speech that they've shown on CBS and BuffaloBills.com, he said, "This game was a great reminder of how hard it is to win in this league. And maybe we got a slice of humble pie today, but it's always good to do so with a win." Again, as a Dolphins fan, that makes you sick to your stomach, because a win for you would have been the biggest win of your season, maybe the biggest win of Tua's career to this point, potentially, given the stakes, given the opponent, given the location of the game. Maybe. And then for the Bills, it's like they're in the exact same game in the exact same situation, and they're the ones that get the miracle win at the end. And for them, it's like, oh man, we didn't play very well. This was humbling, and I guess we'll take the win, but holy cow, that stinks for them. Great for us. Interior defensive line's where my head's at here. You know, Dwayne Carter was a guy I thought that was popping pretty good before he got injured. He's going to be gone for a while. I don't think we've seen a good version of Ed Oliver this year. And whether you're somebody that last year thought that Ed Oliver was on the verge of being a superstar and had entered the conversation of top five defensive tackles in the sport, then you're probably really disappointed with Ed Oliver. Neither Luca nor I got there with Ed Oliver last year. We both thought that he had his best season of his career. I never have thought that Ed Oliver is anything more than either above average to good. And last year, I thought he was good. This year, I think he's been pretty average. And on a day today, he had zero tackles. And I had the ability to, because of YouTube, watch a lot of these plays back in slow motion. And he was a culprit of being out of position a lot on a lot of these runs. Not only out of position, but a reason why Terrell Bernard and Dorian Williams were not kept clean, and why they were fighting through the muck on almost every running play trying to get to the ball carrier. It's funny because watching the reaction on Twitter, there was a lot of hate out there for Dorian Williams and Terrell Bernard. And I thought both of those guys in the run game played pretty well. Now we'll go back and watch the tape. We'll see, maybe some things popped up that I didn't see, but at least on first watch, I thought they were two of the guys that actually brought it in the run game today. And I thought they were hung out to dry by their defensive line quite a bit today. Offensively for the Bills, Ray Davis. Luca, Ray Davis led the Bills in receiving with 70 yards, one of which was a 63-yard reception. He only had four carries, but he got 20 yards on those. James Cook, solid day, 10 carries, 44 yards, five catches for 25, did have the big drop. It continues to be James Cook gets the lion's share, and then Ray Davis and Ty Johnson just kind of fit in where they get in. Are you at all getting to a point where you would like to see Ray Davis get a bigger slice of this pie?
Yes, in the sense of this. I didn't care for seeing Ty Johnson being the first man out there after James Cook in the early stretch of this game. I remember that vividly because the question was said out loud where it's like, oh, Ty Johnson's out there right now. That's an interesting choice. Now, Ty Johnson finished with three carries on the day, so clearly that changed. But it was just an interesting one in the sense of, I think Ray Davis is for sure at this point, if he's not a two, he's a 1B. I think James Cook still, with all things considered, brings all the dynamic things you want out of a player on the field that it's hard to pull him off. But that said, there's something about Ray Davis's play that, simply put, is reliable and consistent. And it's all the things you really need as that 1B to roll, whatever it is, out of the backfield. To put it simply as well, Josh Allen has just as much trust, I feel like, at this point in Ray Davis as he does James Cook. I think that is a valid statement. And I think at this point in time, Ray Davis has proven enough to Josh Allen, to Joe Brady, to everyone, Sean McDermott, that I think it would be very welcomed to see kind of maybe those rookie shackles come off and maybe just look at him as just another guy on the roster, as if he was the Ty Johnson previously. And it's like, this is the next best option in out of the backfield. This is the next best option we have. He showed it in the Monday night game against the Jets. He did it again today with that, mainly that pass catch for a touchdown where he slipped through and just made a big play happen. It's he's a guy. He is absolutely a guy. Like, is he a superstar? No. Like, but he is dependable and reliable and everything you could possibly ask for as a compliment for James Cook. I don't think he's a workhorse either. That's again why I say James Cook is still the dynamic threat you want out of the backfield, but you have no problems just interchanging what you want with him and Ray Davis at this point in time, because I think the two things or the different things that these guys bring together make a very powerful weapon out of that backfield that I think just, yes, you will only see more and more of it by playing Ray Davis more, because James Cook still is going to do his thing. The drop that he had is just so frustrating because it does feel like you get that from James Cook more than you would like to see.
Yeah.
Especially when it's like, he catches that ball. Is he housing it? Maybe not, but he's getting a massive play out of it because he was clear ahead of the defender behind him. But that right there is like, just catch the damn ball. That's all you need to do differently in that situation, James Cook. So it's just frustrating in that sense. But all of a sudden, if you then sub him out because it's just not his game and you bring in Ray Davis, I'm just as comfortable with that. You're going to get a different way of production. But overall, it's going to be still great production, and you can depend on it that, yes. To answer your question in a very long, rounded, winded way, yes, I would love to see him used more, but I still think James Cook is that 1A. Ray Davis would just be that 1-2 or 1B-2 complement to James Cook, and we can kind of fade out the Ty Johnson situation because, honestly, I think you just have too much upside with Ray Davis being that second guy.
I'm not sure what Ty Johnson brings the team that James Cook doesn't. And to me, it's a little redundant, and James Cook is a little more explosive. I like Ty Johnson. I think he's a useful player, but I'm with you on that. Quick note on the Colts game, and maybe we'll learn more as we go here. The Colts just turned the ball over on downs on 4th and 2. And this has been a theme with the Colts all year long. 4th down and 2, basically 6 minutes to go. They got to have it down. The running back is Trey Sermon, and Michael Pittman's on the sidelines. So I will say, watching this, Joe Flacco threw an absolute hospital ball to Michael Pittman on 2nd down in front of Harrison Smith, of all people. And it looked like Michael Pittman was slow to get up, but they didn't really do a lot of looking at him. And then a couple plays earlier, they were looking at Jonathan Taylor's leg. He was walking a little funny. So certainly something to track with the Bills playing the Colts next week. But Colts are one of those teams, man. They tend to overthink it. And I think we'll probably see a couple situations like that next week against the Bills. Luca, your guy, Christian Benford, did not play today. He had what was his injury? It wasn't wrist. Wrist was Amari Cooper. Oh boy, why am I forgetting what his injury was? Oh, anyway, I'll get it. I think maybe a hand injury. Kyer Elam started. And I thought, for the most part, Kyer Elam held his own. There was one play where he bit the cheese on a double move. And I will say, I can't talk out of both sides of my mouth. I was on the Bills chat halftime show, and I said, one trend you are seeing with the Dolphins is everything they do is short and it's first read. And Tua was 25 of 28 today, by the way. And it's almost like my thought was, are they trying to protect Tua too much? Is there no explosiveness to this offense? At some point, a defense they're playing is going to challenge them to throw deep, understanding that they still have Hill and Waddle out there. And I think it was the second drive the Dolphins had in the second half. Here you go. Excuse me. First read. He pump fakes it to Tyreek Hill, who's breaking on an out route. Kyer Elam jumps it. And, oh, it's a pump fake. Deep pass Tyreek Hill. Luckily, Tua under. Excuse me. Got something caught in my throat here. That was the one negative play. He also came within an eyelash of forcing another fumble. Overall, Luca, what did you think of Kyer Elam today? And do you have any thoughts about him being the new Dane Jackson, where a cornerback goes down, he's in and can still keep the defense afloat?
Him being the new Dane Jackson's pretty spot on. I mean, I don't feel comfortable enough where it's like still to the point of, okay, we're going to be moving on from Rasul Douglas after this season, and he's going to be the new guy opposite of Christian Benford. Benford's injury was a wrist injury, Josh. So
thank you.
You were good. And Benford's only knock is, of course, his availability. Hopefully we don't see him out too long right now. But still, it's yet another season that he has not been able to complete full time. These are just injuries that happen, though. It's hard to hold it too far against them. But again, best abilities, availability, so on and so forth. With Kyrie Elam, it's, hey, he's going to be an okay boundary corner for you when you need him to be. But hopefully you don't need him to be against your elite guys on a regular occurrence still at this moment in time. I do think overall today was better than anything we saw in the past. Like, I'm not going to really knock him too much. It's not like he's been getting regular play time and you're still seeing all of these errors. This was his first full game out there. You know, yes, he bit the cheese on that double move. That's kind of always been his thing anyways. What I will say is this: we didn't have one defensive holding out of him, and that's an improvement. And this is the kind of week when you're playing a Jalen Waddle, a Tyreek Hill, an Odell Beckham Jr. These are guys you'd probably hold, and he didn't get caught doing that. He probably did hold them a couple times out there, but he didn't get caught, and that's the key here. So I'll give him the props for that. That makes me feel a little bit better, to the point where that's why I'm comfortable calling him the Dane Jackson for this defense, because what Dane Jackson was a perfect, dependable break glass. You need a week or two because your starter's out. This is the guy you can bring in, get you at least some serviceable starting reps at the boundary corner position, and things will be afloat. Things will be okay. And then you still have your other guy opposite of him doing their job as the starter at a proper level, we'll call it. So fingers crossed that Christian Benford's not too bad. Kyir did at least better than before and still just okay overall, just because you still saw some of those tendencies come out that you would like to see him curb and get rid of. But it's hard to knock him when he doesn't have that playtime, like I said before. So nothing to harp too much on him about. It is what it is. It happens. Even your Rasul Douglases do bite on double moves sometimes. You can't kill a guy over it, kind of deal.
Yeah. And I don't mind it. It's going to happen. I'm not expecting him to come in and be, you know, one of the best cornerbacks in the league. I feel like he played at a starting level today, and I don't get this sense that Christian Benford is going to be out for a while. Even if you look at some of the pictures coming out of the post-game locker room celebration, the wrap on Christian Benford's arm was basically tape at this point in time. And some of the online doctors were saying that's a great sign. Like maybe he even could have gone today, but they just wanted to be extra careful with it. So hopefully Christian Benford is back, because it is funny. It's not funny. The funny is a weird word to use here. Kyir Elam actually had his shoulder popped out in the game, and he had to pop it back in to finish the game. He was not giving up that spot to Jamarcus Ingram, and I respect the hell out of that. He's like, no, this is my opportunity. You know, we could be looking at a situation where Kyir Elam maybe even needs some surgery and could miss some surgery this offseason, but could miss a couple weeks here as they do a little rehab situation on that. So the Bills are being tested a little bit, Luca, with some of these injuries. And this is where I want to get to more of a big picture topic. As we sit here today, the Bills are 7-2. The rest of the AFC East either has 3 or 2 wins. And the Bills have beaten the Jets in their building, and they've swept the Dolphins, and neither one of us think that the Patriots are a team that's even going to sniff 7 wins total this year. So we can probably get them out of this conversation. Do you think that as this season goes on, that the Bills will be in a situation where they can almost have that? It's the fourth quarter of a game. We have a 20-point lead. Let's just not get anybody hurt mentality. And what I mean by that is, obviously, you're not going to just go out and start Mitch Trubisky for a month. But in a situation like today, Benford maybe could have played. Maybe Amari Cooper could have played. But the Bills are playing the long game. The last 2 years, the Bills have lost playoff games in their building for a lot of reasons. But one of the primary reasons in my mind is they were fielding about half a roster. They had AJ Klein starting off the street. Their defensive line when they played against the Bengals was in shambles. They had no Von Miller. Last year they were down, I think, 5 starters on defense. So when you add all that up, you could understand why the Bills would be a little bit more conservative. Now, I understand that what I'm about to ask you has a big caveat, because the team that's currently the one seed in the AFC comes to Orchard Park in 2 weeks. And maybe if the Bills win that game, your answer would change. But can you see a scenario, Luca, where the Bills do use the ease of the AFC East and this cushion to their advantage, and they err very much on the side of caution down the stretch just to make sure they are prioritizing health, longevity, and having the best team possible in the playoffs, even if it sacrifices a little bit of seeding?
Yes, asterisk. I think week by week, things could change. And I only say that because whereas you're saying that the home field advantage hasn't been as much because of those injuries, let's say Kansas City goes into Tampa, or no, technically Tampa goes into Kansas City, but let's say Tampa pulls off the upset there as 9-point dogs in Arrowhead and actually wins that game. And all of a sudden Kansas City's at one loss on the season, whereas you have Kansas City in a couple weeks here. That urgency changes because you can really flip the landscape later in the season, later than usual. It feels like those Kansas City games obviously came early in the season. If all of a sudden you're welcoming them week 11 and you can take that home going into your bye, you kind of have that half game in your pocket. And then you're starting to play around with the idea, even with those losses to Baltimore and Houston, who Baltimore, of course, lost last week, although they did have a big solid win this week. They have one more loss than the Bills. And then on top of it all, Houston is dealing with their own issues injury-wise that could cost them some seeding, if not the division entirely themselves. We'll see, obviously, what happens with this Colts game, although Minnesota did just score a touchdown with 2:05 left in the game to all but seal it. But I will say, I think they will err on the side of caution with injuries in games that they feel like they can kind of manage and get through. I think that's going to be the key here. Will it be all hands on deck for Kansas City? You can't lose the season on that game. So if anyone's kind of heavily questionable, no. But if an opportunity is there for that win to matter for the landscape of potentially a top seed, that could change things. But let's say the Chiefs win out going into that game and the Bills are stuck at their two losses, I could even see where that doesn't even matter as much anymore. If your Christian Benford wrist injury is still nagging going into that game, you could probably see him sit out. If anyone else gets banged up between now into the Colts game through to that week, they could potentially be seen sat out because you have the bye week following that, as well as, like we're talking about here, the division is all but wrapped up. You know, your seeding doesn't truly matter. You can be no lower than four, Josh. So you will have a home playoff game to start if you are the division winner, when you are the division winner. So realistically, you want to be all hands on deck. You want to try to be as healthy as possible when those games mean the most, because you don't want to have your electrician, AJ Klein, playing meaningful snaps against Travis Kelce. You want your Matt Milanos, your Dorian Williams, your Terrell Bernard, your Christian Benfords. You want those guys out there doing their jobs and making sure they can close out those games that you haven't been able to in the past. Your Von Millers, although Von Miller wasn't really present today for the most part, you know, statistically. But again, it's still nice to have him rather than not have him. So regardless, you want to be healthy as possible. So if there is even any more question, when you do have the key first step of getting into the postseason, being winning the division all but wrapped up, caution is okay to have with your injuries, and realistically look at the big picture, the long game, and be like, hey, if you sit this week and next week, all of a sudden it's okay. We can get you at 100% again, and let's try to get into the postseason at full health, or at least at greatest health possible, because that needs to be something that changes that wasn't there the past few seasons now.
Luca, I want to put a bow on this game with our favorite segment of the week, because I do want to leave some time on the back end of this show to talk about the trade deadline. It is this Tuesday. I think it's the only thing going on this Tuesday. I'll have to check my notes.
Make sure you get out there and trade, people.
Sure you get out there and trade. You know, do your part and make sure you trade. We want to talk about if the Bills have any needs to make the team great again. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, everybody. Anyway, let's do game balls, game checks.
There you go.
Game balls is our team MVP. Game checks is player that didn't even need to show up because they should just turn in their game check. Luca, who gets your game ball for the Bills' 30-27 victory over the Miami Dolphins?
It's the biggest layup of all time. His name's in the title of this episode. He got the actual game ball that is now going around in video clips. I don't need to beat around the bush anymore. Tyler Bass is the game ball. He's been through it all. And he was almost cut for not even that great of a kicker that went to a university that I don't want to mention and then was bounced around the league a little bit. I'm glad to see that he was able to battle through all of that, even in this game itself, to hit a 61 yarder to win the game. It wasn't a walk-off, but it was basically the closest thing to it. And you could see how much it meant to him after the game. You could see how much it meant to him when the players and everyone was getting around him and celebrating as well. I have that picture in our thumbnail, Josh, for a reason, because it is obviously the keynote of the game itself, the biggest highlight of the game. And yeah, Tyler Bass, layup of layups. He gets the game ball. We don't win this game without him. Literally, we could have still won it after the fact, but regardless, we don't technically win it the way that we did without him hitting a massive 61 yard field goal. So yeah, Tyler Bass, congratulations, buddy. You finally get a game ball instead of a game check this year.
And we don't cross over in our game ball, so I'm not going to pick Bass. He would be my first pick. I thought about Greg Rousseau, started the game off right with a sack, and then made the great play on Waddle at the end of the game to shut it down. I thought about Kyer Elam. I really did, you know, coming in, starting, holding his own. And then offensively, I thought about Ray Davis, and I thought about Josh Allen. I thought it was an overall efficient game from Josh Allen. But I'm going to go with Taron Johnson. Taron Johnson, since he's come back, I feel like the defense has raised their level, and then he made the play of the game, I think, outside of the 61-yard kick. The play that really turned it around, where the Bills are going in at halftime down 10-6. You're wondering if they can slow down the Dolphins. And on the first Dolphins possession, he goes up behind Raheem Mostert. Peanut punches the ball loose, and the Bills took the lead and never looked back at that point in time. And Taron Johnson just continues to be one of the best players on this entire roster, continues to be one of the best players of this entire era. And on this day, he was a big reason why the Bills got those big dubs and got a victory over the Miami Dolphins. All right, Luca, with the good, there's got to be some bad. Who gets your game check award for today's game?
There's a few candidates. We've talked about a few of the negatives that came from this game. It wasn't a perfect performance by the Bills, any stretch of the imagination. Keon Coleman gets my game check. Now, it feels a little harsh. He had a catch on the game for 21 yards, I want to say it was, looking at it. Yeah, 21 yards. But the reason he gets my game check is simply that ball that was thrown to him, that went through his hands, ends up hitting his shoulder pads area, and then pops up and ends in the breadbasket of Jalen Ramsey. Great. Feels weird complimenting Jalen Ramsey, but great tracking by him on a pop-up kind of situation. He ends up making sure that the Bills get no points on a red zone visit. Keon's got to catch that ball. And even the commentators tried to bail him out with their words. You know, that looked like a run play and everything like that, you know. And then as soon as they cut to Keon's close-up, he's looking at it. He's ready for it. That is a classic run-pass-option read by Josh Allen that Keon was ready for. And just tried to body catch it off his shoulder. I don't know what Keon was trying to do with that. That was a tough way to start the game for him. And that was a turnover that just didn't need to happen. And on top of it all, just the cherry of it all, Josh, the second interception for Josh Allen is yet another mistake by the wide receiver. Essentially, it is not Josh Allen's fault at all. As always, in this case, this season, that Josh Allen threw an interception. So be it. The way that I look at it, that turnover didn't need to happen. It didn't need to have this game be as hairy as it was, because if you score a touchdown on that drive, it feels like you might be able to pull away a little bit more comfortably from this Dolphins team. As you pointed out, that they were, you know, the Bills were driving fairly easily for the most part there for a middle stretch. So Keon Coleman, you get my game check, buddy. That was a tough look there, and he really didn't do too much outside of that anyways.
If the Bills had lost this game, this would be a huge play on Keon Coleman's resume. It already is. But you know, he's had some good. This was just a bad moment. But if the Bills had lost this game, in a lot of ways, this would be remembered as the Keon Coleman game. And that's not good. So I'm with you. I think it's well warranted. If you saw me making a face while Luca was going through his game check, I'm going to give you an idea of what I'm going through now. So as I'm listening to Luca. I'm watching Colts Vikings on the screen right over here if you're watching on YouTube. And they're at commercial. I'm not the biggest TV watcher, okay? There's a show that they're doing a commercial for called House of Villain on E! Have you seen that show, Luca?
No.
I have no idea what it's about. But in the span of a 30-second commercial, I saw a professional wrestler. I saw what looked like somebody from the Kardashians, what somebody from the Real World Challenge. And then I saw two girls in bikinis wrestling. And then I saw another professional wrestler. And then I saw another person from the challenge. I had such a hard time figuring out what I was seeing. There was a lot going on, but I'm intrigued. And I might have to break my my streak of not watching TV too much and check this show out, because there's a lot going on. There was a lot going on in the Bills game today, too. I love the Keon Coleman pick. I'm going to go Ed Oliver. I thought about going Curtis Samuel because he was active today. He had one target, no catches. But, you know, I think there's at least some common thought that maybe he's still laboring a little bit, and maybe he was playing with an injured hamstring. Bills continue to get nothing out of Curtis Samuel. But Ed Oliver, the interior defensive line was atrocious today all the way around, and he's kind of the face of that. And on a day where the Miami Dolphins ran the ball 24, 31 times, Ed Oliver, and I don't believe in using stats to back up defensive tackle thoughts, but had zero tackles. And that tracks, because when I focused on him, he ran himself out of plays. He was a big reason why some of those screens that Dolphins ran worked. And Ed Oliver is just having a really down year, and he's a player that the Bills are going to need more out of if this season is going to reach the ultimate goal. Luca, this Tuesday is the trade deadline. We already saw the Bills go out and trade for Amari Cooper. We know resources are light on this team. Is there another position, or given the fact that Keon Coleman went down today with a wrist injury, Amari Cooper is still out with a wrist injury, Curtis Samuel is still laboring with a hamstring injury, you could even include receiver. Is there a position on this roster you would like to see the Bills address? Is there a position on this roster you predict the Bills address before Tuesday? Two-part question. Answer it however you like.
Is there a position I would like them to address? Yes. That would be the one technique. Get me a run stuffing fatty. No disrespect.
The Daquan Jones being a stud days are behind us, right?
It feels like it. Yes. Okay. It very much feels like it. I'm not saying he's a bad player, but it's not like he's the ultra dependable. We still even wanted him with a torn pec out there. You know, Daquan Jones, it does feel like we're starting to hit that point. He's at that age and point of his career that it's not like it doesn't track. You know, we're getting to that point, and you have guys out there now. You're not going to get a Javon Kinlaw, though. I don't know if he's truly a one technique, but you're not going to get a guy from inner division. But there's other guys probably out there. I can't really think of any names per se. I'm trying to think of who else could be a one technique that was on a crap team that you'd actually want. Because that's generally what you're going to get, is you're going to get guys from bad teams. That would definitely be a position that I would love to see kind of addressed overall. Because as you're pointing out, even with your Ed Oliver situation, it's like there is a clear need for, you just need to stuff up you need to keep the linebackers clean. That's just how this team works. I mean, it is that simple. And if you don't have the guys up front that are able to achieve that job for you, you need to do something else about it. I don't have a specific name per se that I can think of out there. But one technique, interior defensive line, would like to see a little bit more in there in a rotation that can get you something better than what we're seeing right now, because it's not great. It's not good enough. And I think, whereas I mentioned in the run game, of course, that the run fits on the edge weren't working today, I think that overall, I'll be honest, Josh, feels like something that we struggle with pretty regularly with the Dolphins, but it's not something that I say we struggle with week in, week out. And the interior defensive line, though, is something that feels like we struggle with week in, week out, and defending the run on the inside. You know, that's why your Derrick Henrys and such absolutely destroy this team every time they match up, because it's just it's that easy to muck up the linebackers and screw up their day that then allows them to break open into open space up the middle instead of around the edges. So yeah, one technique, interior defensive line. Definitely would love to see that addressed by Tuesday.
Yeah, I'm with you. To me, I don't have a name either. I'm kind of looking through some rosters here. I mean, Dalvin Tomlinson on the Browns is a player I've always liked, but his contract is certainly not one that the Bills could afford to trade for. I'm looking at the Panthers roster. There's nobody that really pops out. I looked at the Vegas Raiders roster. Nobody really stands out. Just trying to think of the teams that are so far behind the eight ball. I guess I could look at the Saints real quick because they lost a stunner today.
I was going to say, I don't know if he's a true one technique, but it's another. I think he is because he was with the Cardinals at least. Lekai Fotu, he's on the Jets right now. Mm-hmm. He's a big old SOB. That would be a guy that I think fits kind of what the Bills would need. And I think he could be that guy. But once again, I don't know how much you're going to be able to convince the New York Jets to trade with you. So it doesn't feel like a realistic thing, but that's the kind of guy I'm kind of envisioning for anyone out there listening.
Another position I think that the Bills could look at would be edge rusher. And a player that I thought was interesting got traded today to the Lions, Za'Darius Smith from the Browns. I like what the Bills got out of Von Miller early in the year. I'm still not sold that that's any kind of answer. And I think at best he's a part-time player, but I think we're sharing a brain, just one more defensive lineman somewhere, anywhere. I would like to see it. I don't predict the Bills do anything else though. I think they kind of just roll with what they have. They're going to get Amari Cooper back. They're going to get Keon Coleman back. Obviously they're planning on at this point getting Matt Milano back. They're going to get Dwayne Carter back. So, Christian Benford will be back soon, hopefully. So I think this Bills team, maybe they think that they're still going to get some sort of a jolt from Curtis Samuel when he's healthy. I mean, good luck. But we know they're short on resources. We know that the Amari Cooper trade was one that was really only possible because of how unique his contract was. I don't know that there's any other moves out there that make a ton of sense. Could it be a situation where like a team like the Cowboys, like they just really want to blow it up? Would they be ready to give up on somebody like Mozzie Smith? I doubt it. And has Mozzie Smith done anything in the NFL that makes you think he's going to come in here and impact your run defense?
He's been pretty awful, actually.
So that's, what does that solve?
Speaking of Dallas, Jordan Phillips is sitting there doing nothing. Not that I want that either, but
that's a move. I think that they have internal answers everywhere they have questions right now. They're going to get Dwayne Carter back. They just got Von Miller back. They're going to get Keon Coleman and Amari Cooper and Curtis Samuel back. And, I think the Bills are probably going to just hold their water and go with what they got. Unless there's something available, maybe in the street that pops up that like they did last year where they got Linval Joseph. And that turned out to be a really nice signing. We shall see. But Luca, you have the privilege, I guess. What's the word I'm looking for? Of going to the game next week.
I do. Yes, I will be in the Indianapolis area for that game next week. And I'm very curious to see what that is. I've never been there for a game. I've never been in that stadium. I've been around it. So I hear interesting things. I mean, naturally, you hear all the things from the McAfee show about how they like to hype it up. And they make jokes sometimes about it being the Lod House. But it'll be fascinating to see what it is, especially after now we do know that the Colts had lost and were kind of pretty bad offensively on the night. So fingers crossed, that we see a little bit more of a Bills showing there, because maybe some more tickets open up on the market there to allow for some visitors to invade there like they did with Seattle. So looking forward to it all.
I'm anticipating a lot of Bills fans in that stadium. It's not a tough drive to make. It's not a tough flight to make. That's, a loss today. I think there's going to be some Colts fans trying to sell their tickets. They didn't certainly see a lot out of Flacco today that probably gets them excited. What are your initial thoughts on this game, though? Because we talked a little bit about it off air, about the sandwich effect, where you have the Chiefs coming in the week after. You just came off an emotional victory over the Dolphins. Your bye week is looming. This is a classic sandwich spot. I think on paper, this is a team that the Bills should be able to handle. I don't want to say easily, but they should be able to outclass the Colts if they bring their A game. You're going to be there. Initial thoughts on this matchup as I try to pull a early line for this game, if I can find it anywhere.
My early thoughts are, yes, the Bills should be able to take care of business here. I actually do think the Bills are kind of, I feel like McDermott's established enough of a hard culture in that locker room that I don't believe them to be the style of team that would kind of get caught looking ahead in the traditional trap sense, where it's a very valid point by yourself. I mean, you just come off an emotional win against Miami, as you've brought up. You are having Kansas City come to your house in a very, very anticipated game for week 11. So all of a sudden you have to go travel to Indy for a week 10 match that, for all of intents and purposes, is being sandwiched by two quote unquote more important games. But I do think McDermott's kind of established a next game mentality. He's had that in the house for a while now. I don't see it being kind of the look ahead spot that you would see other teams have happen to them. But the one thing I will say that popped off to me is, if you watched this Sunday night game, that interior defensive line, where that is a problem for the Bills right now, it feels like for us, it seems to be a very good thing for the Colts. And if there's one thing that terrifies me, it is those two in the middle absolutely raising chaos with what has been a very good season so far for this Bills offensive line. Osiris Torrence is going to have his hands full with that interior. It will be interesting. I mean, the Colts were only in this game because of those two guys in the middle. That is a good defensive play out of their secondary. I think their secondary is actually well-rounded. I don't think they have any Nick Cross is really nice back there. I think they have some good players in the secondary, but I don't think I would still take the Bills secondary over it. But that interior defensive line for the Colts is definitely a problem. It's the thing. If I were McDermott, if I were the, Joe Brady or, Aaron Cromer for the offensive line, that's what I'm circling. It's like, hey, this interior is a problem, and they can boss you around and just show all the tape from this Sunday night game. That's all you got to do. And it's like, we need to make sure we're doing everything we can to not let what just happened for the Colts against the Vikings tonight, being that we're recording on Sunday night, against the Bills come next week. So I overall, is that going to be enough for the Colts? Probably not, but it's probably going to make it a very interesting game, because does feel like Josh Allen, sometimes when he sees a lot of chaos directly in his face, that's where those yips can kind of create opportunities for the other team coming from him. So fingers crossed that that doesn't happen, but we shall see.
I managed to find a line. Do you want to guess?
Sure. Why not? Okay. Colts are coming off a loss in Minnesota. Joe Flacco didn't look great. Offense didn't look great. Bills didn't look great, but one, they're humming. They're on a 4-game win streak. I'm going to go ahead and say Bills minus 5.5.
Bills minus 4.
Ooh.
This okay. Game opened at Bills minus 2. Now you tell me, does that mean that's what it opened at this summer when all the lines came out? Or does that mean that's what it opened at earlier this, maybe earlier today when the lines first really got posted?
Yeah, I would think it would be somewhat recent if they're saying open. I don't think they would have done hey, August 31st preseason line. Yeah. This is what it was. That seems like a really ridiculous thing to do.
So it seems like that the public, at least, is overreacting to what they saw, or maybe not overreacting, reacting strongly to what they saw from Colts tonight.
Yeah,
they have already bet the game 2 points in the Bills' favor, minus 4. I would anticipate, as this game gets closer to kickoff, that being maybe a little bit closer to 3. 3 is a big number in the betting community. You get a home dog that is giving up more than 4 points and it's not a terrible team, the sharps are going to be kind of all over that one. But I will say, I think this is one of those quote unquote home games where it could be feel like a neutral field for the Bills. We shall see. I like their chances in this game. I like their chances every single game. I did not see a lot from the Colts tonight from Joe Flacco. Haven't really seen that this year from him. He lost in Jacksonville, barely beat the Titans, and now they managed to score 3 points against the Vikings. So this feels like a game that if the Bills get Benford back and they get one of Amari Cooper, Keon Coleman back, mind their P's and Q's, go to Indianapolis, take care of business, and send Luca home happy with a win.
Please.
Luca, you and I'll be back next week for Bills Colts postgame show. Easy for me to say. I'll be back at halftime of Bills Colts, hopefully talking about a halftime show of a good first half. I feel like those have been the minority this year, Luca. I really enjoyed the Seattle first half. I was enjoying the hell out of the Jets first half until the Hail Mary happened. But the Bills' slow starts have kind of been killing the buzz on these halftime shows. People have been angry. The Bills actually have a minus point differential in the first quarter. But, you know, hey, as long as they get the win, it's all that matters. Luca and I will be back next week to talk everything Bills Colts. Put some videos out this week on our YouTube channel, some highlights from this episode, and then maybe something to get you ready for Bills Colts. Luca, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
No, simply put, I hope that this road trip out to Indy will end with a Bills win, and hopefully that drive back from Indianapolis, which isn't too bad, but you do have to go a long way through the state of Ohio, is not a miserable one. So very much looking forward to it. Always enjoy being a road fan, I will say that, Josh. So next week can't come soon enough.
I'm trying to look now to see if you have a chance to knock out. Oh, you do. But no, you don't. You don't, actually, unless you want to just make it an epic Sunday. I was going to see if you had a chance to double dip and catch an NBA game while you're in town. No. This is wild.
Yeah, yeah. They're home Wednesday and they're home Sunday, but then they're on the road Friday. It's pretty weird.
They're home Sunday, the same day that the Colts are home against the Bills.
Yeah.
Against the Knicks.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
How is Stokes not going to this?
I don't know.
I'm now I'm thinking about this from your perspective, like traffic is going to be nuts.
Yeah. There, I was talking to family that I have out there. There's a little bit of a concern, but, we'll see.
And I bet you there's people that are double dipping in this. I mean, that's a perfect opportunity. You go to one, you just walk across the other. You miss the first quarter of an NBA game. Who cares? Like you're there. Like it, NBA games, if you watch them close enough, they all come down to the,
is it 5 o'clock first dip?
It says 4 o'clock here, but I'm thinking, let me see something here that kind of helps me figure it out. I'm thinking that is my time and I'm on Central time. So that would be 5 o'clock. Yes. Yeah, so that gives you just about an hour in between games.
People could do that. I won't be one of those, but people could do that. That would be an interesting place to go to, but no, I won't be going to Knicks Pacers.
I should speak up for Indianapolis too. I've been there several times now. I have family from Indy. And I went to way too many Bills Colts preseason games that I am way too proud to admit. Like I saw Lawyer Malloy break his arm in 2004. Nice. I saw the Bills Bledsoe's first road start in the preseason in 2002. You know, I haven't seen a regular season game. I did see a regular season game there in 2004 when the Bills went on their big winning streak and ended up losing to the Steelers backups. I did two games in one day. I went to Cincinnati and watched the Bills beat the Bengals at 1 o'clock. We drove back to Indy and saw Ravens, who the Bills needed the Ravens to lose to help them. The Ravens with Ed Reed and Ray Lewis lose to the Peyton Manning Colts. I mean, so many Hall of Famers in one game. Terrell Suggs was there.
What a game
there
to go to.
I know. Brian Billick against Tony Dungy. I mean, holy, so many legends. Shit. You didn't even realize at the time how great it was. Yeah. Super, super fun experience. That was the RCA Dome, though. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that the setup in downtown is kind of neat. I'm from St. Louis, okay? And the situation in St. Louis is this, and I hate to talk bad about my own city. Downtown is not somewhere you want to hang out. Downtown is somewhere in St. Louis that you go to what you're going to and you get out. It's not the nicest area to hang out. So when I went to Detroit, this past 2 years ago to see the Bills and Thanksgiving, you hear all these things about how dangerous Detroit is. And I got there and I was like, this downtown is fantastic. It reminds me of Seattle. Like you're walking around, you don't feel like you're in any danger. Everything looks clean. Everything looks new. Talk to some folks from around Detroit. And it's like, yeah. So it's like the inverse of St. Louis, where it's actually in St. Louis, the downtown is the rough area. And like the suburbs are the nice areas. In Detroit, it's more like the downtown is the nice area and like the outskirts are where the bad stuff happens. I'm saying all this to say Indianapolis reminds me a lot of Detroit. It's a downtown you don't mind hanging out at. There's a really nice mall that's like that. I think there's a walkway over to the stadium where you can get some good food ahead of time. There's great parking down there. It's a nice downtown. It's not as nice as Detroit. It's not as nice as Kansas City where they have like the sports complex set up. But I think you'll have a good experience there, and I definitely expect you'll see a lot of Bills fans there. So I'm excited to hear about that, and I'm excited to hear about your experience there. And it's a retractable roof too, Lucas. So you'll have to like keep tabs on the weather and see if they're going to have that thing open or closed.
Yeah, or do it mid-game like it happened in Arizona. I don't know if you saw that. There was hail. Fun fact for anyone that didn't watch the Cardinals-Bears game, an electric factory happened in Glendale, Arizona today. But it started hailing mid-game as the Bears were out there. So mid-game, they decided to close the roof because it was hailing in Arizona during the game. It was a wild stitch because I genuinely thought there was a rule in the NFL that you are not allowed to open or close mid-game. You have to make that distinction, say, 2 or 3 hours beforehand, and you have to stick with it for safety reasons and whatever, so on and so forth. But yeah, mid-game, it started, it was rain, then hail real quick, and it was pretty wild. And they just mid-game just boop, closed that sucker right up.
That's a fascinating question, too, because if the situation's reversed, right? And like, let's say it was open. Or no, it was closed. And then they have this big lead. They had a big lead in that game. And all of a sudden they're like, hey, it's hailing out here. Like, let's open it up. Let's shut down the Bears. I mean, that would be terrible. But maybe it's one of those things where it's like a common sense rule of, okay, this is going to suck. We're going to get hailed on. Let's get this thing. And closed.
Of all places, Arizona.
Right.
Like people in that stadium. I mean, they probably cut to the roof 30 times in a 5 minute window. Josh, that even me in my living room, like, can they stop cutting to the damn picture of the roof? Like, we get it. There's bad weather and it's hailing. Like, they're closing the roof now. But overall, in the stadium, that had to be a wild experience. Just, you're sitting there. It's a beautiful day. Like, you looked at the weather apps on your phone and it said it was sunny. But then all of a sudden, next thing you know, there's a downpour on the field. And then you're seeing white dots just pellet all over the place. You're just like, what? Is it hailing in the middle of Glendale, Arizona right now? What is going on?
At least the shot of the roof is better than the old B-roll that CBS keeps rolling out of Niagara Falls every time they do a Bills game.
Yeah.
Like, I guarantee you that is not a shot of Niagara Falls from earlier today. It's probably like 3 years ago. It's like, oh, the falls are here. It's almost like the new stadium should be a diversion from that, where when they're coming back from commercial, instead of showing Niagara Falls, maybe they show the new stadium. Nope. Still seeing Niagara Falls, that same B-roll shot we've been seeing for 20 years. Oh, the NFL. All right. Well, Luca, I will talk to you next week. Have a great trip to Buffalo. And win or lose, you and I will touch base after hopefully a Bills victory where they improved to 8-2. And we will see you all next week on Bills Chat.